Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working from home on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, January 21st, 2021. The South Sudan Police Service arrest drug peddlers in Juba.
It should not only remain in the legal document. It should be made a public issue that do not only look at punitive measures, but also look at the engagement of young people in marijuana as a national concern.
And Sudan is set to announce its new budget this week.
So given some of those goals of trying to reform the economy, reduce inflation, revive growth, and also really control the deficit, I would say the budget balances many of those goals and within the constraints that we face.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Some residents and civil society activists in South Sudan's capital, Juba, say despite government restrictions on the sale and use of drugs, some young men and women still use marijuana and other substances. The head of a local non-governmental organization known as Forum for Democracy, Accountability and Governance says many young men and women smoke marijuana. Major General Daniel Justin, spokesperson for South Sudan National Police Service, says the police have arrested several people selling or smoking marijuana in Juba. For VOA News, Winnie Achayo reports from Juba.
Juba resident Jackson Tho Attack says he smokes marijuana every day. He began smoking when he was 24. Attack says his uncle, who was a paramount chief in his village, would regularly smoke marijuana at home, and when he was away, Attack would smoke his leftovers. Attack believes marijuana has medicinal properties and can help you feel better under many circumstances.
As for me, no any other sickness can affect me apart from flu, cough and malaria. And the malaria usually attacks when I have not smoked. The rest of the sicknesses cannot enter into a body of a person who smokes marijuana. Even when the killer disease, corona, came, we took with people who never ever smoked. If it is not treatment, why do people look for it?
Jame David Kolok, executive director for the local NGO, Foundation for Democracy and Accountable Governance, says some area youths use drugs because they are unemployed and have nothing to keep them busy. And he says some youths smoke marijuana to drum up courage to do some things they normally would not do.
Most of these young people who are referred to as Torontos do not do this if they are not intoxicated. And they have to use marijuana to be able to have the courage to grab people's backs, to have the courage to break into people's shops, to have the courage to be able to rape women, to have the courage to be able to attack people on the highways and so on.
Kolok says marijuana use should be criminalized.
It should not only remain in the legal document. It should be made a public issue that do not only look at punitive measures, but also look at the engagement of young people in marijuana as a national concern.
Kolok is urging parents, teachers and community leaders to have an open conversation about preventing youths from smoking marijuana and taking other substances. Dr. Remo James, a physician at Juba Teaching Hospital and Morobo Clinic, says smoking marijuana can cause side effects that may lead to loss of memory or could induce negative, sometimes even criminal behavior.
You can lose your sense of eating. You can stay like you have satisfied. You can stay for 3 days without eating. So, can reduce your sexual immorality. You cannot free. Thirdly, you get you mad. You can wake naked on the road in the future. That's the impact.
Dr. James says there is no clear treatment for people addicted to marijuana except counseling. He says the government should create programs to support the nation's youth who have addiction problems. Major General Daniel Justin, spokesperson for South Sudan National Police Service, says police arrest drug smugglers at the border.
We are dealing with it right away from the border, but those who manage to smuggle it, we have on the checkpoints anti-drugs officers checking the travelers in regard to the drugs to make sure that these drugs are not allowed to the town. Yeah, and even we went as far as we have some fields where it is grown in the southern part of Juba. Yeah, we reached those fields and we destroyed them.
Justin says police have destroyed marijuana plantations in Western Equatoria and Yei areas. He says whenever police arrest someone involved in marijuana production and is convicted, police ban the substance in public. Justin says people who consume illegal drugs will be arrested and punished in South Sudan.
The sentence is there. Sometimes if you are a trader, you go for 10 years imprisonment, you see, and so on. And the user is the one chargeless period imprisonment.
Chapter 26 of the South Sudan Penal Code 2008 under offences involving dangerous drugs says a person who commits the offence of unlawfully possessing or using a dangerous drug upon conviction shall be sentenced to imprisonment for a period not exceeding 5 years or pay a fine or both. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
Some civil society activists in Jonglei State are criticizing the state governor for opening a bank account in Juba meant for remitting the state's revenues. On January 8, Governor Dine Chagor ordered humanitarian agencies and companies operating in the state to remit taxes directly to the new bank account at Ecobank in Juba. The activists are urging the governor to revise his decision, saying it's a violation of the Public Financial Management and Accountability Act of 2021. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Juba.
On January 8th, Jonglei Governor Dine Chogur ordered humanitarian agencies and companies operating in the state to remit taxes directly to the new bank account. Activists like David Garang, chairperson of the Jonglei Civil Society Network, says it is wrong for the state governor to open a bank account when the state government has yet to be fully established. Garang says Chagur's decision to open the new account at Ecobank violates a 2011 Financial Management Act.
Well, to really seize on that opening of the new account and wait for the government to be formed first, say that all the defunct estates of VA, Okoba and Fangap would come to Jonglei first, opening an account in Juba without the signatories from the Ministry of Finance, is the violation of Public Financial Management and Accountability Act 2011.
Governor Chagur acknowledges that on January 8th, he ordered humanitarian agencies and companies operating in the state to remit taxes directly to the new bank account. But Garang says governors like Chagur should not be the direct managers of financial accounts of the state, since they might be tempted to misuse public funds.
Politicians and political householders are not direct managers to the public finances, because one time or any time, any minute, they may be changed. And if the money is given to them, the one holding the account of the state, they may go with the money. Not only that, if anything they want to do, as they will be the one monitoring the account of the state, they might be doing the way they want. They might be withdrawing the money the way they like, without any program of the state that is meant to be done.
Some Jonglei state residents commenting on social media have also criticized Chagur's decision to open the account in Juba, saying there was no need for taxpayers' money to be paid in the capital. They also question who the signatories to the new account are at a time when the state government is not fully formed. Chagur says the bank account is meant to unify block accounts.
There has been so many PIT's account that has been created by all the defunct state financial institutions. And so Jonglei State has created several accounts, BA State, Okobo, Pangak, all of them, in which there has been a lot of mismanagement of public money. What I'm doing now, I want to make sure that I unite all of those accounts into only one account, so that it will be easier for transparency and also for the citizen in Jonglei to know exactly where their money is going.
Chagur says opening the new account fights corruption, noting he has already identified names of suspected corrupt officials in the state.
We have some names, but I'm not ready to give you those names right now. When that time comes, you will actually hear those names in court. And so right now we are in the process of gathering all the evidence. We want to make sure that how much money is coming in that they've been misusing. The public will know. Everybody will know.
Personal income taxes for Jonglei State civil servants were previously paid through Kushbank in the capital Bor. According to the Public Financial Management and Accountability Act 2011, the Director General for Accounts shall be responsible for the compilations and management of the accounts of the government, the custody and safety of public money, and all the resources of the government. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaiding in Bor.
Still on money matters, Sudan's transitional government has passed its 2021 national budget this week. A senior economic advisor at the country's Ministry of Finance and Economic Planning says the 2021 budget will emphasize spending on social protection programs and education. Majdi Amin tells South Sudan in Focus that the budget comes at a time when Sudan is going through difficult economic reforms and soaring inflation. For VOA News, Nabil Biaji reports from Washington.
موازنة العام 2021 تعتبر أول موازنة بعد توقيع اتفاق السلام بجوبا ورفع اسم السودان من قائمة الدول الراعية للإرهاب. وموازنة هذا العام خصصت مبالغ مقدرة لمعاش الناس والحماية الاجتماعية بمبلغ قدره 260 مليار جنيه و54 مليار جنيه لمشاريع مخصصات السلام بنسبة حوالي 29% من تقديرات الموازنة.
Sudan's acting finance minister, Hiba Mohammed Ali, announces passage of the country's 1.1 trillion Sudanese pound budget, or roughly 20 billion US dollar budget, according to the official exchange rate for the pound. The budget was passed by a joint session of Sudan's Transitional Sovereignty Council and the Council of Ministers on Tuesday. Ali noted this is the first budget since Sudan signed a peace agreement with rebel groups in Darfur and since Sudan was removed from the U.S. state sponsors of terrorism late last year. Majdi Amin, senior economic advisor at Sudan's finance ministry, says the budget is designed to address many of the country's economic problems.
So given some of those goals of trying to reform the economy, reduce inflation, revive growth, and also really control the deficit, I would say the budget balances many of those goals and within the constraints that we face. The deficit is substantially reduced to around 1.5%, 1.4%. This is a really healthy level of deficit.
Ali told reporters in Khartoum the 2021 budget aims to reduce the inflation rate from what was more than 250% in December to 98% by the end of 2021. Amin says Sudan has different priorities this year compared to last year's budget.
In the 2020 budget, social protection was the largest item, followed by defense, contingencies, the economic sector, health and education. In the 2021 budget, social protection remains the single largest expenditure item, but education is now the second largest item. It received an increase in budget from around 51 billion Sudanese pounds to 137 billion Sudanese pounds, and defense is now third.
Social protection programs include direct cash transfers to families, rehabilitating the public transport system, investing in youth employment, as well as keeping in place government subsidies on wheat, cooking gas, medicine, and electricity, according to Ali. The new budget also allocates some 54 billion Sudanese pounds, or roughly 9.5 million US dollars, to support Sudan's peace agreement. Amin says while the 2021 budget has larger expenditures than last year, it also projects larger revenues.
Expenditures rose about 55%, but in revenues increased 62%, at least as the projections. That includes tax revenues, you know, broadening the base of taxation and improving the system, but also substantially higher revenues from the gold sector.
Sudanese officials say most of the 2021 budget's expenditures will be financed from revenues that include taxes and gold exports, instead of relying on financing from Sudan's central bank, which they say should reduce the country's skyrocketing inflation rate. Amin says the government may continue to adjust the budget as new sources of financing are expected to be available, including financing from the World Bank and the IMF through an initiative known as Heavily Indebted Poor Countries, or HIPIC.
Much larger sources will open up, which would then be allow us to do a lot more financing of the development expenditures of the country, infrastructure, health and education again, but really investing in reviving the economy, especially agricultural industry, all depend on, you know, substantial infrastructure investments, including electricity.
Sudan started a staff monitor program with the International Monetary Fund late last year to reform its economy and open access to international financing. IMF's managing director, Kristalina Georgieva, said this week her office is working intensively with Sudan to build the preconditions for debt relief so that Sudan can be eligible for HIPC. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what are you thankful for?
I'm thankful for life. The fact that I am able to live a full life and be able to do the kind of things that I want to do.
I'm very thankful for my life, my children, and my job. My job helps me to get money. I'm very, very thankful for that.
I thank Allah for my life and for my parents.
I'm grateful because I've attained at least education. The education is going to help me get a job and get other opportunities in life.
I'm thankful for my family, my friends, my husband, my children, and all the lovely friends of mine who have been helpful to me.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Michael Park, who served as the Trump administration's appointee as chief executive officer of the U.S. Agency for Global Media, the parent organization of Voice of America, notified staff on Wednesday afternoon that he had submitted his resignation as requested to the Biden administration. Park's critics accused him of trying to turn Voice of America into a mouthpiece for the U.S. government. Still on press matters, after 4 years of hostility between the former U.S. President Donald Trump and much of the news media, press advocates are hoping for a reset. VOA's press freedom editor Jessica Jarrett has more.
U.S. journalists are working in an increasingly hostile environment, facing physical attacks and verbal assault from protesters and law enforcement, not to mention relentless verbal attacks by outgoing U.S. President Donald Trump. The pro-Trump mob that assaulted the U.S. Capitol smashed equipment of an Associated Press crew. They charged and yelled epithets at journalists, assaulted crews, and scrawled "Murder the Media" on the building's doors. Over the past 4 years, pipe bombs were sent to CNN. A gunman killed 5 people in the Capitol Gazette newsroom in Annapolis, and the government spied on journalists covering the migrant caravans at the southwest border. Angela Graylin-Keene, president of the National Press Club Journalism Institute.
It wasn't simply a matter of the president and his aides not liking coverage, which is normal, but they attacked true things in ways that were dangerous and posed physical threats to journalists.
Oh, I called the fake news the enemy of the people, and they are. They are the enemy of the people.
If anybody that would ask a nasty question
That's
like
not
that,
a nasty-
when you report fake news, which CNN does a lot, you are the enemy of the people.
Trump and his supporters accused the media of treating him harshly and unfairly.
Coverage of any president, really any leader, is by definition not going to, most of the time, be complimentary. That's not usually what makes news. So the scrutiny that Donald Trump got is true. Of course, there was a lot of scrutiny, but that is the job of the press.
Critics say U.S. support for press freedom has diminished on the international stage, where America has historically been a leader. One example is its widely criticized response to the killing of Washington Post correspondent Jamil Khashoggi in Saudi Arabia's Istanbul consulate. Suzanne Nossel of the human rights and free speech group Pan America spoke with VOA by phone.
In the case of Jamal Khashoggi, you
know, they made quite clear that they were not going to let this butchering of a journalist interfere with their relationship with the Saudi government.
She says organizations like hers lose leverage to free jailed journalists without support from the U.S. government and its bilateral relations around the world. The State Department has applauded the courage and determination of independent media, and in statements condemned politically motivated persecutions, impunity and attacks, and the threats levelled at female journalists. The White House also had some success, including ongoing efforts to free Austin Tice, an American freelancer missing in Syria since 2012. Incoming President Joe Biden says he will defend the rights of activists and journalists and work to restore relations with the media, but analysts say his press freedom record is less than ideal. The Obama-Biden administration saw tighter access to information, prosecution of sources, and seized journalists' phone records. Suzanne Nossel, CEO of PEN America.
Those were very, very dangerous things and things that we weren't used to seeing in the U.S. either. And those happened during the Obama-Biden administration. So definitely those of us who advocate for press freedom and access to information are watching warily for what will happen during the Biden-Harris administration.
Advocates are pressing for toned-down rhetoric, more protections for media covering protests and unrest, and for the U.S. to stand up for press freedom. Again, Suzanne Nossel, CEO of PEN America.
The Biden administration needs to start speaking out on behalf of individual journalists around the world who are targeted.
As the U.S. enters a new presidency, journalists and rights groups will be pushing for press freedom to be a priority. Jessica Jarit, VOA News.
From US, we move to Uganda. Africa Elections Watch, a non-governmental organization, has condemned what it calls massive electoral malpractices and gross human rights violation during Uganda's January 14 presidential election. The Uganda Electoral Commission says longtime President Yoweri Museveni won a sixth term. As Atieno Odhiambo reports from Nairobi, Africa Elections Watch is calling on regional and international organizations to commence an independent audit of the Ugandan election.
The group, which comprises Kenya Human Rights Commission, Amnesty International, Haki Africa, among others, says it sent in over 2,000 election monitors across Uganda and that the election was not fair and credible based on documented incidents and reports from the election monitors. John Gidongo is the chief executive officer of Inuka Kenya, or Rise Up Kenya, a member of the Africa Elections Watch.
Africa Elections Watch is a coalition of organizations and individuals working on the continent's electoral issues, including monitoring, observation, and advocacy. Africa Elections Watch had over 2,000 election monitors in the Uganda general elections. The coalition has documented widespread violations of human rights as well as deliberate disregard of the election process, and I meant human rights abuses.
Gidongo also says there were widespread human rights violations during the election process.
The announcement of Yoweri Museveni as the winner of the presidential election comes in the wake of widespread human rights violations that are already documented. President Yoweri Museveni and his administration have, among other things, mismanaged the election, suppressed the right to freedom of expression through an internet and social media shutdown, used the security forces, including the military deployment, to intimidate members of the political opposition and their supporters ahead of and during the election. They've intimidated the media through state violence and direct intimidation of journalist personnel. The state has also suppressed scrutiny and accountability through physical attacks, arrests, and other forms of coercion against opposition party agents, human rights defenders, and election observers.
Kenya Human Rights Commission Acting Executive Director Davis Malombe says Africa Elections Watch has sufficient reason to discredit the results of the election process. He called upon regional and international bodies to rise up and speak up for Uganda.
Indeed, there's sufficient reason to poke us into both the results and the entire process, which is why the African Election Watch is asking regional and international bodies like the African Union, East African Community, the European Union, and the governments, regional and international human rights organizations, to rise up and speak out with and for already suppressed Ugandans. Silence will kill Uganda, and this silence will embolden other leaders, especially in the region, to take a similar route to muzzle the voice of the people and deny them the right to elect their leaders of choice in a free, fair, and a just way. And also, this also justifies why we are also intervening in Uganda as Kenyans and also as Africans.
Main opposition presidential candidate Robert Kyagulanyi, also known as Bobi Wine, who lost the election, says Ugandan government has placed him under house arrest. Wine has rejected the results, saying the process was full of illegalities and irregularities. His lawyers have petitioned the Uganda High Court to set him free. The Electoral Commission says that about 7 million Ugandans did not vote in the January 14 election. The commission gives no reason. However, Africa Elections Watch has alleged that Ugandans who did not vote did so because they were intimidated by the heavy military presence during the polls. Atieno Odhiambo, VOA in Nairobi, Kenya.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Mudu. During this pandemic, the World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say if you have a fever, a cough, or have trouble breathing, you should stay home and contact a healthcare facility. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest health news.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Starting Friday this week, we will resume airing listener comments. Send your brief comments about issues in our news or what is happening in your area. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. I repeat, the number is +1 202 630 8011. We will air your comments every Friday. That's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Kulium by Emmanuel Kembe. We've been listening to Emmanuel Kembe with the song Kulium. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your phones, vehicles, and homes. Please remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you are in public places. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Aouzou, Ndiakalou, Bobou, Bessou.